Come on in, everybody. We're looking forward to a great session, increasing leadership capacity. They asked me to introduce Tom, and I thought, goodness, I don't think I need to introduce Tom Haynes to this crowd, especially after the amazing day and a half we've had together already. It's just been a great time together. Come on in, have a seat.
Thanks.
And, well, let's just open in prayer together, ask the Lord to lead us, and then I will hand it over to Tom. Heavenly Father, you are good. You have been so good and generous to us. And so now, God, we come to you. We ask you to increase our capacity to listen and learn and be soft-hearted. God, would you teach us? Would you grow us? Would you stretch us today? Thank you for Tom. Father, we pray that you would guide him now. Help our hearts to be open to your words through him. And we thank you for this time. In your holy name, amen. Come on up, Tom.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Wow. So, who is in the room? I'd like to get a bit of a feel for who is here. By who, I don't mean your name. I mean, what type of leadership do you do? Like, what's your ministry role? How do you serve? Kathy, I'm going to have handouts here, too. So if you could help me, that would be great. So why don't we just share with me what you do in the church, how you serve in the church. I know they're not all seemingly leadership at maybe the highest levels and that kind of thing, but every person leads in some way, in some kind of context. So talk to me about what you do in the church. We'll start back here.
Associate pastor.
Okay, over here. Okay, good. And here? Leadership team. Okay, great. And here? Deacons? Yeah, okay, great.
Pastor and church planting.
Okay, great. Okay, great. And down here?
Integration and welcome teams.
Okay, great. And behind you?
Leadership and elder
training and children. Okay, great. Here. Deacons?
Elders?
And here? Yeah.
Chair of the board.
Okay, great. And next?
Help with youth and adult
ministry. Okay, great. Great. You don't have to lead in that at all, right, with kids? No. Oh boy. Yeah, there's lots of leadership there, right? Yeah. Okay, on the board? Yeah. In the back? Yeah. Okay. 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 Deacons. Okay. And?
Lead
pastor. Yep. Youth and young adults. And then care. Yeah. Okay.
Elders.
Youth and children, yeah.
Executive admin.
Mm-hmm.
Board chair and usher.
Okay, good. Yeah, you heard the cats. Yeah, okay.
Associate pastor.
Okay.
Director.
Okay.
Deacons.
Yeah. And we'll go here.
Interim pastor.
Okay.
Retired pastor.
Yeah. So, in other words, a tired pastor. Yeah. Okay. Deacons. Okay. 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 It's quite a row. Elder, pastor, deacon. That's great. Behind you?
Youth.
And worship. Okay. Okay.
Deacon.
Yeah.
And
okay, great. And lead pastor.
Associate.
And?
Children's director.
Is anybody else I didn't get? Maybe in the back. What roles do you serve in the church? Okay. And at the far back? Okay, great. If you could move up this way just a little bit. We're doing a workshop in a cavern. Want it to be a little cozier if we can. It'd be great. Leadership is an amazing thing. It's something that every one of us does at one level or another. We all do it in our lives, in our friendships, in our families. But when it comes to the local church, sometimes it seems like we hit ceilings of capacity, and we're going on, and there's just things coming from all these different directions. We feel like, what do we do, and how do we do this? It's interesting. John Piper defined leadership in probably the simplest way, and the most kind of a benign terminology. He said, "I would define leadership as acting and speaking so as to create a following toward a goal." And now, it's not Christian, it's not Christian, it's just leadership. Acting and speaking in order to create a following toward a goal. And yeah, okay, that's a thing. That's definitely the kind of essence of what leadership can be. What I would like us to do today really is to talk about some things that as I've had various leadership roles in my life, whether they are roles that have happened in my family, or in the workplace, or in my ministry environments, things that I've learned over the last 30 plus years in serving in those ways. Probably no more than that, sadly. So a lot of years of serving in those kinds of roles that I've learned some lessons. Some of them I've learned the easy way by somebody said, this is how you should do it, and this is a good example, and I tried it and it worked. And other ones, I didn't do that. I wished I had, because I learned the hard way, because I did something, everything blew up, I had to figure out how to fix it, and then when I finally learned that, it was like, oh, this is what you're supposed to do, and it gets better. So let's just walk through. I've made a list of things. Some of it's on your page, some of it's not. But before we get to what you have on your handout, let's see here if this is going to work. Oh, boy. Is this going to work for me? So I'd point it up there, and it would work. Oh, there's a power button, too. Okay, there we go. That might work. All right. So, as we begin, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. This is kind of foundational. Wisdom is key. And so when I started out in ministry, I'd already been leading in several different contexts. In the workplace before I went into ministry, I was a leader in my place of employment. When I played sports, I was a leader in that place as well. And in my family, it for many respects, by God's plan, I was a leader among my siblings in the strangest way. I was the youngest of five siblings, and to this day, I'm the one who leads the family. And I don't know why that is, but it's something that God built in. And God just did, and it's happened that way. And so leadership is something that's always been there. Early in ministry, right actually out of the gates, I graduated I was still working on a BTH, and I became the senior pastor of a small church in the country, Otterville. And I was a kid, you know, in my early 20s. And there I am leading this church, having panic fits. I didn't know what I was doing. I'd had, 4 months of an internship That was my ministry experience, and then thrown into the deep end to lead this church. Tammy and I were the youngest couple in the church. And I was having panic fits, so I thought, what better place to go than to learn wisdom? And so I went to the wisdom books, and I spent probably the first 2 years of my ministry marinating in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and just going back and then doing it again, then going back and doing it again. And that has been a huge blessing to me. It's amazing. There was things that I learned from that it's almost like osmosis. You know, you spend enough time marinating in something, it just becomes the way you think. And that was a very helpful exercise to me. But it did two things for me. When the scripture says that, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding, there's two things that you learn when you learn about God. When you learn about God, you understand who He is and who it is that you serve and what He's like. And that's all beautiful and it helps you to lead. But I think even more than that, you learn who you are before Him. And I become so great and you become so small. And everything that I thought was great about, I'm like, I'm nothing. And all perspective starts to come into view, and it changes everything. One of the things that I've learned that is my friend as a leader is knowing myself. The more I learn about myself, the more I understand how God's made me, who He is, and how to lead people. So I would encourage you, this is out of the gates, no matter what kind of leadership you do, you need to, at every turn, if you see a strengths test or evaluation, take it. If you see a personality profile, take it. You might say, well, I've done one of those. Do a dozen more. Every time you learn a little piece about yourself and how you are uniquely shaped by the Lord, it helps you to become a better leader and increases your leadership capacity. Because you may be butting against a wall and realizing, I'm doing it wrong because I'm wired in a certain way and this is not working for me. I've done all kinds of them. The one that I use, I started using with all of our church planters, and they use today, is called the Grip Berkman, and there is a Berkman testing system out there. But then there is a modification of that, or an addition to that, called the Grip Berkman. And so you do the full Berkman piece, but then there's this Grip portion, which is a ministry applications of all of it. And so it basically talks about how you lead in ministry context and really digs down on that with your unique personality, your unique wiring. And so we do it with our church planting couples. Some of our church planters do it with their whole team. And we have done it with our church planting team. I've done it with the full staff team at Feb Central. Because what we learn about each other is what happens under stress? What's your stress response? I've learned what mine is. So on the chart, I'm kind of off in one corner pretty far because I like to get things done. I'm wired that way where, you know, I get her done. And that's kind of how I am. When I'm under stress, that can become a little unhealthy. And so I have to be aware of it. And my team actually has to be aware of it so that when they know I'm under stress, they're like, okay, we got to adjust on this because this is going to be his natural thing and that's not great. And so my natural tendency, and this is something I wouldn't know. I would just be like, why am I so frustrated with these things? Some people, when they're under stress, they shrink away and find them in the corner somewhere. And it's like, what's going on? They're just unable to function. Well, that's stress. And they need to know that and then be able to respond to that. For me, I get more things done. Kind of on steroids. And the people around me that I really care about and really want to be coming along on the team in that time, I don't care what they think. This has to get done. And that's not good. But that's a stress response within me. And I wouldn't know that without testing and understanding those things. And this can help me avoid doing something that I don't want to do. I don't want to do something that's going to be offensive or hurtful or just ignoring another person. I don't want to be that. But I wouldn't know it if I didn't do a test. And so as leaders, God has given us wisdom. He's given us tools that have happened only. We use it all the time in the medical field, right? You're not feeling well. You go to the doctor, you say, you know, I got this thing that's hurting and I don't know what to do. But when you're a leader, you need to use tools to diagnose and understand yourself so that you can lead to better capacity. The neat thing is, with a tool like, well, we just use Berkman as an example. The other ones work well at this as well. But for Berkman, what we're able to do is map out our entire team. And we can see, okay, are we hiring only people who are like us? And are we going to, you know, crash and burn because we've missed out all of the different areas of relationship and leadership style and things that we need to round out our team? And so we've actually done it as a team. When we did it with our church planting team, it was so cool because there's this quadrant and you really need all the areas of the quadrant covered. And our church planting team nailed it. We had them all covered. It was just like, everybody had everybody else's back. It was just really sweet. And that's what a tool like that can do for you. Because our tendency as leaders is often to lean towards people who are either just like us or people who are very different, and then we have major conflict. One of the things that I have learned is that I love people now who are... detail, finance, brain people that just love all of that stuff. They're always the people who stand up in the business meeting and go like, have you thought about, and it used to drive me crazy because I just want to get it done. That's how I'm wired, right? Well, now I've learned these guys are my best friend because they're going to point out all the things that I miss because I just want to get it done. And they're going to say, no, I'm not opposed to it. I just want to help you understand and know that we're going to do this and all the things are going to get done that need to get done. And when we're finished, the end product is going to be amazing. And I realize they're actually my best supporters. They're not the opposition. And early in my ministry, I was like, I don't get this. Now I know. But tools help you. So strongly encourage you. Use tools. Use all kinds of them. So I've used StrengthFinder. I've used Berkman. The Predictive Index. Steve Adams, if you ever run into his work with the Predictive Index, he can run that through with you and your team. Does that really well. Myers-Briggs is an easy tool. You could actually often find versions of these, even free online. You get the initial thing and then you have to pay for the full report. You know, that's the classic internet scam. But even the initial thing is helpful because it helps you understand and get a bit of a picture on where you're at. So wisdom is saying, know the Lord and know yourself. That's pretty important. As we dig into the rest of this, humility is critical. And the more you know yourself, the more you realize how much you're lacking. You know, in Luke chapter 14, verse in that passage 7 to 11, this is the passage where, you know, in the feast, the person who thinks, yeah, you know what, I'm pretty important, goes and sits in the important part place. And then the host is like, well, no, you go over here. Everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. In leadership, it's important that we understand who we are and before the Lord, and don't exalt yourself. This is the classic Romans passage, don't think more highly of yourself than you ought. And in leadership, that will serve you well in building your team, and a principle that you invest in that will increase your capacity. A humble leader is much easier to follow. And it's something to study. I've seen too many leaders who, for whatever reason, have ended up in leadership in the Christian church, not just our churches, but other churches, who are narcissistic. They are self-focused, self-centered. They're perfection, and they think everybody else is an idiot on the inside. They may not say it, but it comes out. And they treat other people like garbage. That's happened with leaders in our own movement. Some leaders from the past that I've known have been more like that than others. And today I don't see that much, but I hear about it frequently, not by names, but my sister is a trauma counselor, a therapist, a psychotherapist, and it is shockingly sad to hear the number of people who have been used and abused by Christian leaders who are narcissists. The last one to admit it, because they're too perfect, but the abuse that comes as a result of that and the pain that comes through is pretty significant. So humility is a critical piece here, knowing, you know, you're not perfect and stepping out in that. Create a culture of servant leadership within your team. And, you know, Jesus said, I came not to be served, but to serve. And that is it's a really important value for us as leaders. And sometimes as a leader, when you have a team, it can be easy to say, well, no, you're supposed to do this. You do this. You do this. And showing them the way. Walking with them and showing them by your own leadership, it's important. I was at an office not long ago, and it was of a big ministry, and there was some staff whose it wasn't their job to go and answer the door and deal with situations, but the woman who did that was away from her desk for some reason. And like the president of the organization was off in his office, and there's these two other people who do a different type of role in an office right nearby with a glass wall. They could see what was happening in the lobby. There's a person pacing around in the lobby. It wasn't me, but I was observing this. I'm not a part of that organization in any way, but I saw it happen. They looked, and they carried on with what they were doing. And this person is like looking all over, looking in there, and they wouldn't pay attention. It wasn't their job. And I'm like, oh my goodness. If they worked for me, they wouldn't anymore. Because they didn't care about people. Like, what are we as a church if we don't care about people? And there's people there that they needed to know that as leaders, we put everything down and we help. And there's times when it might be beneath you because it's not your job. You put it down and you go do it. And you show, you the team then learns from you, and your team becomes way more functional. Something happens and they don't just walk around whatever got dropped on the floor and the mess that's there. They're like, oh, you know, I'm the worship pastor. That's my job. But somebody did this and there's nobody here. The janitor doesn't come back for another hour. Somebody's going to fall. I'm going to go get something, clean that up. And then, and people look and go, why is he doing that? Or why is she doing it? She shouldn't. It's not her job. But she did. And everybody else learns, you know what? When something like that happens, we all step up. We all take responsibility. Servant leadership is a beautiful thing. We learn to all be engaged when it happens well. Give time to your staff. I learned this from Bishara. Bishara and I have been friends for since probably about 2010. And one of the things that I learned from him most was this, that He just said to me, "Baba, we're a family. We've got to spend time." And I'm like, okay. Because, again, my get-her-done personality, where I'm just like, I want to hire people who are highly skilled, experts at what they do, and let them do it. Don't bother me with it. You do the piece that you're supposed to do. He's like, no, Baba. We're family. We got to be family first, and then everybody will. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to try it. And because I'm trying to learn, trying to be humble in it, I'm like, I want to just, and you know, it's the best thing ever. So I pay our staff to sit in a staff meeting once a week for an hour and a half every week. And we start off with, tell us how it's going. How can I pray for you? How can we work together? Do you need us to help you with? And I'm doing this stuff. And it is the best thing. It's created the best culture in our staff team. And so when I transitioned from church planting to regional director last October, first thing we did, now the executive staff, this is what we do. Every week, whether you're here or not, if you're not in the office, you're on Zoom, we're all together and we do it all the time, and it's helping so much. So I've learned things. I'm trying to learn and grow as a leader and be better at what I do. And I tell you, this is really big. I've had leaders in the past who are like, yeah, I don't know what's going on. I ask, you know, how's this your staff person doing in their role? Well, you know, they're doing good. You talk to the staff person. How is the relationship with your leader? And they're like, well, we don't really have one. I'm like, well, what do you talk to me about that? What do you mean? Because he thinks your role's going good. And then they chuckle. And I say, okay, when was the last time you had a meaningful staff meeting where you sat down and you shared what's going on? And I have had times where I've had staff people tell me it's months since they've sat down with their leader and understood. And if you're a leader here of a team in some way, don't let that happen. Don't let that happen. I know you're busy. Let me tell you, you're too busy not to do this. This is where disasters are born. That's where they happen. And that same team ended up with a high caliber staff person multiple high caliber staff persons being completely misunderstood by the leader, and sharing that end result with the board and them misunderstanding the staff because they never ever talked. And that scenario is not uncommon. So I share it with you just, this is stuff you can grow on. And the thing is, you invest that bit of time. It seems like you don't have it. You invest it, and your ability to get stuff done goes up significantly. So these are things I wrote down thinking, what are the things that are actually going to increase our capacity? What have increased my capacity to lead? This is an important one. Okay, meet with your staff. Give them time. You have the time for this. You absolutely do. You carve it in. It's important. Providing equipping for your volunteers and staff. Oh, didn't move. Providing equipping. There are a lot of times we think, oh, this person can just do that. They can get it done. And we struggle with them not doing it really well. Use the resources that are available. Our dream for this conference is that we grow it and offer more and more tools for your staff and your leadership teams so that when you come here, you can plug them in and say, look, we've looked at the list. I really, as a leader, I'd love you to do this and this. And for the other ones, you want you to do that and you do that. And get them all taking the things that are going to specifically tweak their ministry. We are envisioning the future of Stronger being really for our churches a full service tool that on an annual basis you bring people in and you get their ability to lead topped up. That's what we're hoping to see. So we're at a still feel like we're at the infancy of Stronger. We want it to become so much more that it would be like if you're a Feb Central church, it's just weird if you're not here. If your whole team's not here, you're like, you feel like this is just not good. They should be here. Why am I here alone? Right? That's the kind of stuff that we want to see happen. We want to provide. So I would say you need to get those training things. Sometimes we struggle with people limping their way through tools. Sometimes it's as simple as they need to take a Microsoft course and learn how to better get the most out of their Excel sheets because they're struggling with that in the office and it just seems like they're limping along. Get them to do it. And it costs you $200 for them to take a little course. It'll be like the best $200 you spent if they'd learn that. If your bookkeeper is limping along through software, there's training for that. If they're using Simply or they're using QuickBooks or they're using whatever, get them to take a course. Because if they just figured it out on their own, they are missing so much. It's crazy. So there's things like that that you can offer that cost very little. And actually people, like some people will be like, oh, I didn't know that was available. You just give me the time and pay for the day and I'll go do it. Yeah. You are at Stronger. This is our conference.
So is there something else? It's only this. You're talking about.
No, I was talking about as a tool on an annual basis as one thing that you could do. I'm saying there's lots of opportunities, lots of tools out there. But if you only have one thing, we're hoping to develop this more fully as a tool to offer more things for you. But it's only one thing. I see it as highly, highly valuable for you to look for and offer as many training things as you can for your staff, whether you pay for them or they pay for them themselves. Some of our staff have done that where they've just said, you know, I want to be better in this field and I'm going to take a course in that. I'm going to, you know, sign up at whatever school and do that just to improve. There may be a way that you can help them cover that cost or maybe you're not in a position to do that. I don't know, but somehow encourage it. Okay. So next, communicate clearly. It is so common, or maybe I could say it the other way, it's uncommon for our ministry staff to have clear job descriptions with expectations and knowing when you've actually done the job properly. As a leader, no matter what your ministry team is, if you invite somebody onto your team, let them know what you expect of them to do so that they can then say, I feel like I've done what was expected of me and I've done a good job. But if they don't know in writing what's expected of them, they're going to make it up. And it may not be what you want them to be doing. I learned this the hard way, hiring a staff person, where I verbally communicated the job description because we didn't have any policy where I had to have them written and I didn't have a written one. So I learned it the hard way. So I hired a guy. We talked about the role. I talked about the role with the elders and everybody was on board with what we wanted him to do except him. And it was a disaster because when he started, he's a great guy, but he just started doing stuff that wasn't his job. And he kept wanting to do these other things. And I'm like, that's my job. What are you doing? Like, we need you to do. And finally, you know, we got into this major confusion about his role. And finally, I had to have a sit down with him and just say, look, your job title is this. You're not doing that job. Like, his job title was discipleship and integration. And That was not what he was doing. And we were having floods of new people coming in. And there was nobody connecting them and doing that. He wanted to go out on visitation with me. And I'm like, I don't need you to do that. I'm doing it. And it's like, but it was just this confusion. He's, well, I'm a pastor. I want to go visit. I'm like, well, no. No, that's not the job. But if I had written down the expectations and said, if you do this, 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 and this, you will have accomplished what we've hired you to do, he'd be able to look and say, well, I've done this, 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 and this, and I've done it. And it would be good. So our staff all have well-written, clear job descriptions that they sign. And we have them all on file with their signature on it saying, yeah, I read this and I agree to it. And they have a copy of it. And then every year I sit down with them and say, how's it going? This is your job. Are you feeling fulfilled in that? How did these things go? And we can do that together and they can say, yeah, you know, it was really good. Or I'm struggling with that one. It doesn't feel like it really is fulfilling the overall purpose of what we're trying to accomplish. And we adjust their job description. And things are good. But having it written and clearly understanding it makes all the difference in increasing your leadership capacity, because people will generally move to what they think instead of what is supposed to be. So that can be not good. Delegation. Oh boy. We've wrestled with this with church planters all the time, because church planters are highly gifted individuals who, they can do a lot of things. That's one of the nature of a church planter is they kind of have to be a jack of all trades. So they could do everything, sort of. they do some things really well, but they can kind of do everything. And so what happens, people are happy to let them do everything. A lot of you are like that too. You can do too much. And because you can, doesn't mean you should. This was Moses' situation with Jethro, right? And Jethro comes and, what you're doing is not good. Well, he said, well, the people come to me. I sit here and they come and they ask questions. Oh, I have to give them decisions all day long. It's not good. Why is it not good? Well, because there's other people who can do that. And your giftedness, your ability can be used elsewhere without wearing you out. Derek talked about it this morning, didn't he? God gives gifts to the church on purpose. And if you and I are not using those gifts that he intentionally gave to the church on purpose, kind of borders on sinful on our part. We need to do that. We need to use them. We need to let the body grow and do that. So the more you can delegate, the better. And there are some things that go along with this. We'll talk about when I talk about the things to avoid, but it's so, so important that we delegate. Here's the next one. Be a recruiter. Be a recruiter. As a leader, I know early in my ministry, we had a committee that gathered every year to do nominations. And some of you will still remember the nominating committees, and some churches have kind of gotten away from that. But it was like my worst nightmare. Because you never knew who they were going to nominate. And sometimes it was like, really? You got the dyslexic guy to be the bookkeeper? This is not good. You know, you're wrestling with, okay, what are we going to do? Because it's not the right fit. And I remember one year, I was trying to fix it. And I said, our system is broken. You keep finding people who will say yes when they shouldn't say yes. And they can do it, but they're not doing it well, or you're killing them. And so I took the top, seven or eight people in the church who were doing way too many things, counted out how many they were doing. And I remember going to one woman and saying, you know, we love you and you are doing so many things in the church, but this year you have to drop five things. She was doing 13 things. 13 different things that you could identify as roles in the church. And I said, this year you have to drop five. And so let's go through the list and I want you to drop them right now. And she was so hurt that I was, and then she was so happy. Because she had to understand and come into terms in her mind. It's not, you know, I don't want you to do these things. We love you. And we want you to thrive and use your gifts rightly and not be abused by the church just because you can't say no. Because they keep asking you because you won't say no. And so we removed things and we recruited new people to do them. And it was good because there's lots of people in your church who just sit there. I remember one time, a girl that I grew up with going to this church and she's sitting in the congregation. And I'm thinking, why are you sitting here? She's in one of our churches, and she's concert pianist level, taught music in a whole bunch of different settings, and just like gifted through the roof musically. She didn't even serve in the church. They already had musicians. They already had things, so nobody asked her to serve, and it was her primary gift. She was way better than the people on the platform. And it's like, okay, we have to come to terms with this concept as leaders. When God gives gifts to the church, He intends for the gifts to be used. And so if we don't have a place for somebody's giftedness in our church, that's on us. Does that make sense? If God has given them to us and they have a particular giftedness, then we need to be rethinking what we're doing. Saying, well, if we have like three music teams, we only need two if they're rotating. What is it that God is preparing us for? And what do we need to be thinking ahead to? Or how do we bless the church down the road that has no musicians? Do we cycle through and send, you know, once a month a team there and once a month a team over there? And do we do things like, is there other things that we need to do? And that's just one example of a whole lot of other things. But there's a thing like that that we need to be wrestling with. God may be wanting to blow the doors off your church. And because we're so stuck in a rut of the way we've always done it, that we don't see the opportunity and experience the blessing of the Lord where He opens the floodgates of ministry and blessing on us. So recruiting is vitally important. Be a recruiter. One of the things, and this is something that I encouraged our Next Gen ministry with, just planting a seed in their minds, and they have embraced it and running like mad. Years and years ago, it was normal in the fellowship, FBYPA and youth ministries and things, for youth pastors to speak into the lives of the young people and say, wouldn't it be amazing if God used you in ministry? Do you think that someday you could be used in ministry? And so kids started to dream about whether God had ministry as a vocation. That trend shifted in the 90s and early 2000s to youth pastors joking in front of their kids saying, if you can do anything else, do it. You don't want to be a youth pastor. You don't want to be in ministry. And they would joke about it and say it. And the kids take that seriously because it's coming from their youth pastor that they highly respect. Well, I don't want to be a youth pastor because he thinks it's a joke. And then we've hit this hollow place where we have no leaders. And we wonder why. And among, you know, evangelical denominations, it's been a disaster of leadership where, you know, pastors are aging out, they're retiring, nobody to fill the gap. It's different among our leaders now. They're planting the seed and they're seeing something happen where they're helping the young people to dream about what it could be. Be a recruiter. You know, look, you see young people who, you know, they may be a little wild and they might be on the edge sometimes, and you look at it and you go, boy, that guy, but people look to him. You say, you know what, someday maybe God's got a plan for you in ministry, and you plant the seed. You let God do his thing, but you plant the seed as a pastor, as a leader, as someone who leads those young men and women, for them to see that, boy, God might have something else for me, something more for me. You plant those seeds. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. So there are things that, you know, we have seen change probably in the last, I don't know, 15 years within our movement that have been really good. You know, we've got young people now dreaming good dreams. And, you know, that's the result of guys like Jeremy back here investing in youth leaders and young people and those things over time. And now FebYouth taking a next steps in their journey of in leaning more into leadership development. But they can't do it alone. They need us as other leaders to be also speaking into our church families and into their lives. So I'd encourage you to do that. You know that in grade eight, kids are supposed to decide the track that they take in high school, which will direct the rest of their life. That's what they're supposed to decide. And then they buttonhole them into a track in high school that directs their life. They have to make that decision in grade eight. And none of us have been speaking into their lives. That's like travesty. If that's what the world is expecting of our kids, and we're sending our kids into that environment, then we better be preparing them and painting a picture and putting dreams into their minds of what could be and how they can change the world. Because they can. By the power of Christ. Pray for your team. You know, Paul in his pray without ceasing is a big deal. Pray for your pray for everybody who's on your team. Pray for them by name. Ask them for specifics and be in prayer. We need to be a people of prayer. It's the simplest thing to do and yet the hardest thing to be consistent at. But I challenge you to do it. Do it. It took Tammy and I years to get a grip on this as a couple and in leadership. And I am so embarrassed by that because it's so simple. And yet, I think it's the one thing that is easy for Satan to help us to become complacent with is real prayer. And, you know, everything changes when you do this well. And by well, all I mean is be consistent. Be consistent. Pray by name. Find out what's going on and lean into that with your teams, whether it's your staff or the people who are serving alongside you in other ways. Lean into it. At your staff meetings, you don't have to have like this massive agenda. Sit down and say, one by one, how's it going? And how can we pray for you? And pray for them as a team. Do that kind of stuff. That changes the whole dynamic because people now have your back. It's a different thing. You're not in there alone. Prioritizing tasks. I read this in The Power of Focus. If you got a frog to swallow, don't look at it too long. And if you got more than one to swallow, Swallow the biggest one first. Just think about that for a while. It's pretty disgusting, but it makes a lot of sense. Okay. It's so easy when you've got a list of things and you're looking at it going, oh boy, to put off that nasty one and do the simple stuff that really doesn't matter. But that nasty one, it's hanging there. Just do it. Just do it. Get it out of the way. Get it out of the way. That's a pretty important thing. You do the big one first, then it's easier to do the others. But if you do all the small ones, get exhausted, and then you got to do the big one. It's a killer. These are good ways to get the most out of your leadership. One of the things that I learned years ago when I was doing masters in leadership was to do with this prioritizing. And part of it was making the lists ahead of time. So Friday, Tammy and I now meet on Fridays, and she helps me with my admin stuff. And on Fridays, we go through the list of all the things that are going to be next week. Prioritize them, get them all in the calendar, then I can relax. I don't have to worry about Monday morning being like, oh, what's coming up? Sunday night, before I go to bed, I get out the calendar, have a look, and make sure that I'm not forgetting anything, and I'm all good. But we've prioritized. We got it on the calendar. I don't have to worry about it. But if you don't take the time to prioritize the tasks, you're going to stew, and it's going to overwhelm you. So important to do. Asking for outside help. This is a long time ago, probably 2008, 2009, a pastor friend who was going through a major, major turmoil time in his church, one of our churches. And he was a good guy. And he was going through this terrible time. And I said to him, look, get some help. The guys in the office would love to help you. It wasn't my job. I wasn't there then. And he said, Tom, there's no way I'm going to them, because then they'll think that I'm not a good leader, and I'll get blackballed in the future. He said that to me. And I was like, it seemed like the most bizarre concept to me when he said it. I'm like, what? Like, he clearly didn't know our leaders, because then at that time Lance was the regional director, and that would be like the furthest thing from Lance's mind and action and behavior. He would never do that. And it was like bizarre. And so what he did was he stayed in the church. The problem got bigger and bigger and bigger until he split the church, tried to start a church plant that failed, and joined a different group, and it was a disaster, and they fired him, the church plant. And he's been out of ministry for years and years. I got a call from him just actually a few weeks ago, and he's applying for a job at some denomination that I don't really even know. I haven't heard of them. And they wanted a reference. I'm like, well, I haven't. It's been, I don't know, 16 years. I don't know. But that's he's been out of it. I don't want to look like a poor leader. What he did was behave and look like a poor leader. So ask for help. Get help. That's one of the best things that you could do. If you're smart, you get help and you fix the problem instead of saying, well, no, I got to do this myself. I'm the guy or I'm the gal, and we got to work through this, and it blows up. I don't want anybody to know I couldn't handle this. You know what? One of the greatest things a leader can be is self-aware. Aware when you're in over your depth, you got problems going on that's just like, whoa, and they may be blaming you. Newsflash, we all get blamed. as leaders, you go into a situation and you had nothing to do with it. The problem was already there. You come in, well, now look what he did. And it's like, wait a minute, I didn't do anything. But that happens. So don't worry about that. The last thing you're going to get from those who want to help you is that, because they know. We know. Like, if you came to Feb Central and we're going to help you walk through something like that, we have all been there. We've all been there. And God has been faithful. So ask for outside help when you need it. There are some pitfalls to avoid. You've got this list in your notes. First one is the shadow mission. Avoid the shadow mission. A shadow mission is something that looks similar to the mission that you're called to, but it lacks the substance. So when I was called to ministry, I had this very specific call where God was at working in my heart, and I knew I needed to serve the people of God in the local church. Now, that meant that I had to quit my job as a Ford technician at a dealership, and I had to go to school. I got offered a position with a mission agency where I would have been overseeing a fleet of cars, and I didn't have to go to Bible college to do it. I was already fully equipped to do this, and I had to wrestle with it. Like, okay, I'd be doing missions, so it's kind of the same, but somehow God had called me to do something with people and serving and leading people to Jesus, doing that kind of thing. And this mission agency, you could look at it and say, well, no, you're repairing and keeping this fleet working so that the missionaries can be out there all across this whole region doing this work and of evangelizing and doing all of that, and so it'd be great. But it was a shadow of what God had for me. It wasn't the thing. It lacked the substance. God had for me a ministry where I was actually directly connecting with people, that people were coming to Jesus. Change was happening in people's lives. That's what he had for me. And if I had taken that other path, I wouldn't have experienced, I don't believe, the same blessing in ministry. Also would have avoided a lot of hardships. but no, it was a shadow. It was a shadow. So sometimes there are shadow missions, and we need to figure out what they are at the time. Sometimes our mission committees, some of you, you know, are oversee missions committees. Make sure that you have a plan for what your church is trying to accomplish with its missions budget. You have it as your church. You should have a strategic plan of what are we trying to accomplish as a church as we invest in missions. Because if you don't have a plan, your missions plan will form itself. And that's not usually good. Sometimes a church, when they don't have a plan, they end up with, you know, 14 missionaries on their plan. They're giving them each $50 a month, and it's not enough to really help them. But there have been times I've had missions committee people come to me and say, what do we do? We've got all these missionaries. One time it was actually 14 missionaries. Not one of them was sharing the gospel with anybody. Because, you know, one was managing a compound where missionaries lived, which is fine and needed to happen. But then another one was filing recordings of Bible of the Bible in different languages. They had to be sent overseas to look after filing of that. Another one was working in administrative and office. And so they ended up with a whole list of 14 missionaries who were all doing administrative work. And the church was not really working at advancing the cause. They weren't accomplishing their mission. I'm just about wrapped up here. So have a plan. And make sure that your mission gets there. Quickly, just go through these last few things. Don't set the bar at perfection. As leaders, it's so tempting to say, but if I did it myself, it would be better than if I have him do it or her do it. You know what? Good enough is okay. We want to instruct and teach and how they can do it better and grow them, but you should not be doing it if there's somebody else who can. So don't set it at perfection. Find out where that place is of good is, and it works. Don't put off the awkward conversations and conflict. This one is really, really important. Think about the frog. This is the frog. This is actually the slimy version of the frog. When you have those, jump on that one. Get it done right away. Avoiding it is the worst thing you can do. If you're like me, you avoid it and it gets right in your gut. People take stress in different ways. For me, oh, that's right there. I wake up in the night with heartburn. I got all kinds of things going on. Deal with it. Deal with it. Go and have that awkward conversation. If somebody's been difficult, you need to say, hey, we need to talk, and take them aside and do it. Don't avoid it. Get in there. Jump on it. Hire people who are smarter than you and have more education than you. Get volunteers who you think, man, they should be leading me. Those are the people you want. Don't just get somebody that makes you feel good. You want quality. And that will honor the kingdom. And that's leading with humility. Right? It's important. And then lastly, don't serve with a scarcity mindset. Oh, we could never do that. We could never afford that. Oh, we could never. No, no. Who are you? You are children of the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. You know, what does it mean that he owns this cattle on 1,000 hills? What does all that mean? It doesn't mean that we're foolish with our finances, but if God wants us to do it, then we need to look at it and say, well, how is God going to accomplish this? And walk through that rather than say, oh, we could never do that, and then just don't process it. There's a difference. Wisdom and vision need to go together, and you work it out and you figure out what it is that God wants you to do. Last thing, this is free. I hired a staff person when I was 27 years old. First time the church ever had a staff person. They didn't have any budget for it. And I'm like, how can we do this? You know what I did? I went to the church. I said, we have a special meeting. We've got a guy who's a mature guy in our church. We're going to send him. He needs to do an MDiv, and we can get him in there to do that. He's going to be a pastor. He's going to be great. The church needs an associate. We could never afford it. I said, here's what we could do. We'll invest in him. And this is like a family meeting. And everybody went, yeah, we should invest in him somehow. I said, we got a choice. We can either give him money to help pay his tuition, or we can hire him. And we can have a part-time staff person while he's going to school. What do you think? They got so excited about giving him money to help serve in the church in things that he was probably already doing. But he grew as a staff person. The church grew in their capacity to give. And when he was done, they had capacity. So anyway, just that one's free. Lord, thank you for the opportunity we've had today. And Lord, I just pray your blessing on these leaders. Help them to grow in their capacity and to honor you with their lives of service. And we commit them to you. In Jesus' name, amen. I'll be around if anybody wants to talk. I'm not running away. Okay.